Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Hey friends, this is Tom. I'm just going to give you a little intro here before you actually get into the episode where we interview Rich Lambert to go over a few things real quick and also to make sure that I thank our patrons because we were having such a good time talking that I didn't get to take a break in order to do that. So I'm going to put it right here in the front before the episode kicks off. And if you are listening on the Patreon feed, you're going to get some of the pre-show banter we had with Rich before we actually went into the episode proper. So if that's something you're interested in getting, then make sure you check out patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast, where you can sign up for extended versions of the show and ad-free episodes and getting to chat with us on future episodes. You guys have heard of the whole thing, but I absolutely have to thank all of our patrons. Thank all 48 of you. Holy crap. 48 of you guys, and especially Jared B, who is Akatosh. He is our top level tier 6 patron, and our 2 tier 5 patrons who get thanked every week, Noodle Al Dente and Steven R. Thank you so much to all of you, not just our top 5 and tier 5 and tier 6 patrons, but every single one of you. You guys are what allows us to do this show and even get the opportunities to talk with guys like Rich Lambert from Elder Scrolls Online, from Zoss, and holy crap, you guys are amazing. Thank you for giving us the honor of being able to do episodes like this. You guys make this worth our while. Thank you so, so very much. All right, I'm going to stop thanking you guys. We're going to move into the episode. Enjoy the interview and let me know what you think. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. So reach out on the Discord or on Twitter or wherever. Let me know what you think about this interview. We'll talk to you later. This show is brought to you by our patrons at patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
Robots Radio presents
to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, a place where the Elder Scrolls community can come together to discuss the boundaries of our knowledge about the universe of the Elder Scrolls.
Thank you, Bob Chachinski. Bob says, nice job, Tom. Right button this time. Yay, I did the right button. Well, it's, you know, I got to put on my special professional quality podcasting brain in order to do the show today, because we have a very special guest today. I am your host, Tom or Robots, and I'm here. You can hear him in, as well. Lotus of Doom. Lotus, what's up? Hello. Buddy, how you doing?
Not too much.
We're just he's kind of more chill than I am about this because we got freaking Rich Lambert here. Rich, what's up, dude? How's it going?
Hey.
If you guys don't know who Rich Lambert is, what are you even doing with your lives? He's the creative director of Elder Scrolls Online, and he has been kind enough to pull himself out of his meat coma tonight.
Oh, dude, it was so good. Oh my gosh.
What did you eat?
It looked amazing via Twitter.
I started a brisket smoking this morning at 6 o'clock. And so all day, all throughout meetings, all I smelled was brisket on the grill. And so we devoured it.
I'm sure the dogs enjoyed just smelling that all day as well.
Yeah.
I bet. My wife has been watching that. There's like a barbecue cooking contest on Hulu or something. And it is freaking amazing. Like these barbecue chefs are like, they're building their own cookers out of concrete and they're
Absolutely,
12 hour cooks, and they start at night and they stay up all night in like the finale. It's phenomenal. I've got a new appreciation for like what it takes to cook a brisket or whatever. So that sounds amazing.
Advanced grilling.
I mean, I'm not even at that level and it's amazing. I can't imagine what it would be like to be at that next level, you know, just how good it would be.
Yeah. These people are amazing, but we're not here to talk about brisket and barbecue. unless that barbecue is being, managed by Mehrunes Dagon, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, the Gates of Oblivion are pretty hot, so
it's pretty hot. I bet they've got some good barbecue in Oblivion.
Yeah, Nice, smooth transition there.
So thanks again
pro
for joining
podcasters
us.
Right there.
Yeah, there you go. Pro podcast right there. But thank you so much for joining us. We've got some questions for you. We are very excited. I've got my pre-order in. I know Lotus has his pre-order in for the new chapter of Elder Scrolls Online coming out in a month from today. Day? When? What day?
Just about.
First of June.
The first, so not even a month.
Yeah.
Yep.
My body's
first
ready.
And the eighth, correct?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, the eighth is console.
Yep.
Right. Right. So I'm PC Master Race, so I get to get it a little bit earlier than Lotus.
I was going to say, I have PC Master Race, and I play on my my last-gen console at this point, because I can't get a PS5 yet.
Next-gen upgrade is unbelievable.
Not gonna lie, that's mainly why I want a PS5.
Yeah. It blew me away the first time I put my hands on a controller and started playing it. Like, it was unbelievable. So yeah, I can't wait for it to get out and people start playing it.
The jump is really why I was like, okay, I need that now. Yep. So
I remember like 6 months ago, Lotus was like, I don't know, I'm fine with my PS4. It's fine. Maybe if they have like cross play or something, I'll do an upgrade. And now you're like, no, it looks so good. I absolutely have to get one.
That's the thing. If I can ever switch just a straight PC, because now my PC is way beefier than it was back in the day, I would be happy with that. But at the same time, I'll take the next gen upgrade as well, because I mean, that's still better, and it's like I've got the setup for it, so I just need this to be running at maximum for what it's able to.
Yeah So hey, why don't we dig into some questions here, because we've got a very limited amount of time. Speaking about a new year of contents, this is something we've been through a few times. I'm actually wearing the shirt from Elsewhere.
I saw that.
That I picked up.
I like it.
Yeah, last time I got to meet you in Vegas a little over a year ago. And that's when I bought this shirt, because you guys had all the shirts up there. And finally, my resilience to actually spending money on things was whittled away by the event. And I gave in and bought a bunch of stuff that I had tried to stuff in my suitcase and get back on the plane. So that was fun. But with a whole new year of content coming out, my first question is, like, personally for you, because you play the games, you don't just creatively direct the games, you're a player as well. And when it comes to sitting down and actually getting to play the new content once it's released, it's in its, you know, full release state, what are you most excited about digging into, especially with this next year of content?
I'm always blown away at how the real voices change the feeling of everything when you're playing it. So internally, I play the content, you know, 5, 6, 7 times, you know, throughout various iterations and whatnot. And almost all of that is what we call RoboVO, where we have an internal kind of system that, you know, robotically generates all the VO. So we can do some base timings and scriptings and things like that. And you don't get any of the emotion. You kind of all imagine it in your head. And then when you actually get onto the live servers, that's the first time, for the most part, that I get to sit down and play through the content and hear what the voice actors do and what they've added. And that's awesome. Always blows me away. Always blows me away getting in there and just, holy cow, this turned out so fantastic.
So you're saying you play through the game like 4 or 5 times with basically Stephen Hawking as your... Yep. All of the voices in the game.
It's funny. I pictured Siri immediately just talking to a phone. Actually, I already am going to trigger my phone, so I'm going to mute that before that happens. But yeah, that's what I'm picturing.
You kind of get used to it, and you can almost read or hear emotion in the RoboVO now, because we've been doing this forever. But it's totally not the same. It's really mind-blowing how much different the stories feel when it's a real person reading that line.
Yeah, and the voice actors that you get are very talented. They're wonderfully talented. In fact, the voiceover and the sound effects in the game are so good that every so often when I stream the game, I will play through a part and role play my character, and that'll go up as like extra episodes on this podcast, and people actually listen to them. I was very surprised at first. I was like, if people can watch a game stream, then would they listen to like bits and pieces of a story, you know, played through? And they totally do. And it's not because of me. It's because of the quality of the voice acting in the game and the sound effects and all of that stuff. So it really does.
The music, just the whole thing. Yeah.
Even if you can't see it, like just hearing everything puts the images in your head. That's how well done it is. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I think, and my wife actually tells me this all the time, but one of her favorite designers on the team is actually Brad Derrick. And he's our audio director. And so he's the guy that composes all the music. And she, every time she runs into him, she's like, Brad, I haven't turned the music off yet. I still love it. And normally the first thing she does is she turns music off in games because it gets old quickly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And she still has it on when she's playing. She just loves the music and the audio just overall. So it's pretty remarkable. Just that the whole package we have.
Yeah, that's something I haven't done too. And usually I will turn the music down in order to hear the environmental sound effects and like where enemies are coming from and things like that. But yeah, you're right. I haven't done that either. I haven't felt the need to.
To continue on that gauge, I don't know if anybody uses Spotify, but that's kind of my go-to for listening to music and stuff like that. And when it does featured artists at the end of the year and it gives you like your year in review, the second most listened to artist was actually Brad Derrick for me. So
that's amazing.
Even out of game, I was like, oh, really? I was like looking through it. I was like, wow, I listened to the soundtracks to these games a lot, apparently. So,
yeah. Yeah, it is really, really good. So let's move on to the next question. This yearly formula that you guys have been doing, you've kind of refined it over the last few years. The story of Elder Scrolls Online was launch and then some big changes and then one Tamriel and then kind of this year iteration with new content, new places to go, all sorts of new stories and then upgrades to the game, new character classes and where you find all the artifacts and the stuff in the ground.
Antiquities.
I was like, it starts with an A, but it's not artifact. Yeah, word. Words are hard. So you keep adding these things, but usually every year we get like a new zone, a new story, some sort of interesting upgrade. Is there anything at this point that we're going to see that might surprise us in the future? I mean, something like Companions did kind of come out of left field. I don't know that many of us were expecting that when you guys announced it.
No, it fits, but it's not something I ever assumed we would be getting. Actually, it didn't seem like that was going to be on the docket of things to expect.
Sure. I mean, I think the kind of the yearly cadence seems to be working. Mm-hmm. It helps us internally kind of make sure all the teams are driving towards kind of the same thing. Rather than kind of bouncing all over the place, we know throughout the course of a year, there's a theme. We can plan it out a little bit easier. So that's definitely helped us. It's also helped just players in general, because now they kind of have a good idea of, well, when I come in this year, where do I start? Well, this is how the year starts. This is kind of where it ends. It kind of makes sense. So that is working. I think we'll continue to tune and tweak and iterate on it as we kind of go forward. I don't know that it'll change a ton, but we definitely want to try to innovate and change things and keep people guessing. And that kind of fits in with the new systems we add in as well. I'm a huge fan of finding new ways to get our players to interact with the world of Tamriel and how to play ESO. And I think the last few systems that we've added in kind of show that Antiquities, nobody knew what Antiquities was or even thought it would be a thing. But when you break down kind of the core component of it, it's an alternate activity that isn't questing or killing, because we've got lots of that. but it adds to the exploration and the lore of the world. And that is what our player base really loves, is delving into the world and digging into that lore and the stories and whatnot. And so those are definitely in the forefront of my mind whenever we start talking about new things that we're going to add to the game.
Yeah. And it was a surprise that came out of left field. I know one of the things Lotus and I do all the time is, especially when a new year is coming up, is we like to hypothesize about like, what is it going to be? And I know a lot of people in the community like to do this. And it's something that I particularly enjoy, whether it's like when I'm watching a movie and I want to predict what's going to happen in the end. It's like a personal challenge for me to get in the minds of the creators and be like, okay, if I was writing this movie, this is where it would go. If I was designing the game, this is what I would do next based on everything I know about the world and the player base and what the developers have done. It's kind of a neat puzzle, right? And it's fun when you're absolutely wrong or when you're right. It doesn't matter. Yeah. The result is always fun because there's a big surprise, or you feel like, oh, somehow I actually predicted that. So it's exactly. It's always fun to
guess. But it's good to guess. It's good to remember the, you know, one thing you get correct, and you just sweep the 19 yes. things you got wrong under right. the rug and be like, look, I'm a prophet. Look what I came up with.
Right, right.
Right on the money.
One of my buddies has a saying that even a broken clock is right twice a day. So, and I mean, we love reading all of the, you know, all of that stuff as well. It's really fun to, you know, see the theories out there and see what kind of people are hoping and wishing for. And like you said, sometimes they get really close, scarily close, and mm-hmm. other times they're way out in left field, but that's fine, right? That's the fun of this world.
It's interesting, since you say that, does that actually, like, is that nerve-wracking at all if somebody, like, actually does hit something on the money and, like, you haven't revealed it yet? Is that, like, oh, yeah. a weird feeling when yeah. it's like, what the?
Who's how leaking?
Yeah, that? Sometimes
somebody gets
like,
sent out the airlock they because they were like
so close. Right. Like, did somebody leak something? Like, yep. you know, like it's unnerving when people get it, you know, pretty much bang on. Mm-hmm. Especially when we don't accidentally leak it, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Companions was one of those things that we should have predicted because it's such a big yeah. part of the single player experience.
Yep.
And yet, and I'm sure there have been times where they've talked to people, have talked about it in the past over the, you know, number of years now, but it wasn't really in the conversation as far as I was noticing until all of a sudden you guys announced it. And then I, even just watching the trailer that was just went up, I was like, this seems like something that could have launched day one with it. And I would have been like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like it just right. it 100% fits, but it's not like it was missing to the point where we were like, we need it. It just fits in. I think that says a lot about the way that you guys process what you're doing with the design of the game and making it work as an MMO style, but still inherently its soul is Elder Scrolls. And those two things melding together really work together in the way that you've been able to. And I'm sure it's a very difficult, long, hard process, but you've been able to kind of tread that line in order to figure out how those two things fit together and make them work, which is really cool. And it's a credit to you and the team. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's definitely not been an easy road.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it's a lot of work, but looking back, I'm sure you can also go, well, yeah, I mean, we tried some things out, but really like there's that general uphill climb, you know, over time and then things you progress. So, you speak about the lore with the antiquity system and that being a core part that a lot of people go to in the game. Is there a chance? Okay, so now that we've got like all these rumors about like, oh, Starfield might be out this year, who knows? And the Uh-oh. Elder Scrolls 6.
Here we go.
Yeah, the Elder Scrolls 6 is on the next on the list for, you know, for that team to be working on and releasing. How does it work? Because this is going to be the first time with the Elder Scrolls 6 over who knows how many years from now it'll come out. That there will be a mainline Elder Scrolls, more traditional game released while Elder Scrolls Online is a thing. Is there...
Assumedly.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's going to keep being a thing. It's a successful, you know...
We're not going anywhere.
You're not going anywhere. It's a successful yeah. game. We all keep playing it. You keep making stuff. We keep yep. buying it. It makes sense. Like, it's going to stick around. But
yeah.
when it comes to the lore, is there... Like, are you guys going, okay, how do we tie these two things together? Is the Elder Scrolls 6 now being informed by the things that have happened in Elder Scrolls Online from a lore perspective?
I was going to say, to broaden that, like, since obviously you have to keep... I mean, you guys don't just write things willy-nilly. Like, there's obviously a lot of thought to it. As I've been playing through the older games, I see so many of the connections that you all make these nods to games like Shadowkeyed that was on the N-Gage, and me and like 14 people have ever actually made it through.
Right.
And there's a pickpocketable item from there that's a Startooth, and I'm like, holy crap, that was the quest item from Shadowkeyed. Yeah. Like, nobody's going to get that reference. Like, so clearly you tie it into the whole series. Like, I would say broaden that question to that. Like, how much effort do you have to put in to link all of these games? Because this series is not new. Like, this series is older than some of its players at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a full-time job, right, in digging through that. Like, we have Lehman, who is our lore master that, you know, has to check us on all of these things. Our lead writer is well-versed on this stuff. You know, I've been, you know, in Elder Scrolls universe for a heck of a long time. You know, Oblivion was the first game that I worked on at Bethesda. And I don't even know all the things. And we have a really good relationship with the BGS team where, you know, if we're not sure about something or when we're pitching a new story idea, we pitch it to them first to make sure we're getting it right and doing the lore justice. But it is a huge part of our process is kind of going through there, trolling through the 25 plus years of lore and all the different games to try to figure out what makes sense. And, you know, as you well know, we're in kind of the second era and this interregnum and this, you know, kind of period of time where not a lot is known and not a lot of records kind of survived this period because everything's at war. And so it gives us a lot of latitude to kind of do our own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But our goal is to make sure that it feels like it's part of the world and any chance we get to kind of tie into the world and the other games, we try to do it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of formative things that have been happening in the Elder Scrolls Online. Having done a lore cast, this is something that, you know, is something that we talk about all the time.
Yeah, that's what we need to learn.
Right. But even like the things that are happening in the Eldmeri Dominion eventually lead to the events that allow for the Thalmor to take power. And you have this long breadth of history, just like any really good fantasy novel. You know, we've talked about J.R.R. Tolkien multiple times, how there's this like wealth of knowledge underneath a book like The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit because there was the Silmarillion. And if Skyrim and Oblivion and Morrowind are The Lord of the Rings, then Elder Scrolls Online is like the Silmarillion. It's the stuff that kind of underlies everything else in the future that we've been playing already. So it makes me wonder, like, how many of these things are going to loop back around and going to be formative for the next, you know, mainline single player game, you know, like, and I'm sure you and Todd and some other people have talked about these things, but it's just kind of interesting to ponder this, you know, as a fan of the game.
Well, especially because I don't even know where, like, we don't even know where the series is going forward.
Right.
So
yeah.
we're looking 1,000 years prior to anything now to see, like, it's just, that's such an immense period of time where it's like you kind of, again, it's one of the things I like about the design of some of the harder stuff in the game, but you breadcrumb things that we don't realize are breadcrumbs until sometimes we've completed something. It was like, oh, you told me how to do that like 10 minutes ago and I just didn't realize that that's what you were telling me to do. I was busy being like, what is this? And then it's like, oh right, that was the answer to how to beat that boss, and I just didn't see it yet because I hadn't seen the boss.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way to answer the question without getting myself in trouble is
we don't want you to get in trouble.
It is,
but we want to know as much as you can tell us.
I think it's the kind of looking to how we tell stories and how BGS kind of tells stories in the world. And stories are told through the eyes of the people that are living in the world. There's no kind of omnipotent DM or, you know, God or whatever that says, this is the truth, this is the single source of truth, and this isn't the only way it's happened. And so there's lots of different perspectives and lots of different ways to interpret an event or how it happened. And so, you know, being able to make our interpretations on things that have been written in books and kind of show them to players has been amazing. And that's a core facet to telling stories in Elder Scrolls.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about that all the time.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Very much so. I mentioned this to Lotus a few weeks ago, but I was like, you know what? I think Manny Marco is going to come back. And he's like, what? And I'm like, that's one of my bold predictions. And if it doesn't happen, no one will remember I said it. No one's going to remember. Right. But if it does happen, I said it first.
Yes. Bold statement.
Bold statement.
That's very bold.
It's very bold. It's very bold. So let's move on. So now that you've tackled the CP improvements and revisions that have taken you a very long time. Lots of testing, lots of work. It's gotten a lot of positive responses from the community. A little bit of debate about it, but a lot of positive response.
I'm a positive response. I love the new CP.
Yeah. I think it's really cool too.
The old one, it was just, this is so much better.
Yeah, the expansion on the levels, the way it's laid out, it's all very, very intricate and cool. And this is kind of like we talked about before, this doesn't fit into the yearly formula. This is more of like an underlying thing that you guys have been working on for a long time. From a personal standpoint, and obviously you don't have to reveal anything that can't be revealed yet, but what would you like to see tweaked and adjusted similar to something like this in the future? Are there certain systems or the way the game works fundamentally from the beginning that still need tweaking in your mind?
I mean, there's lots of stuff. We are a lot smarter now than we were in 2007 when we first started building the game. Yeah. A lot smarter. Like, it is crazy. You go back and look at that stuff, you're like, oh my God, what did we do? So there's definitely a lot of what I'll call kind of like tech debt to kind of go through and to look at and see if there's better ways to improve and do things a little bit smarter. I mean, I know there is. There's a lot of things. And so that is one of the big things on the list, is kind of going through and auditing a lot of those systems and looking at them and you know, going through and adjusting them. I think a really good example of that is the CP system, right? Performance wise. I think another big part of that is, you know, and we haven't quite got there yet, but the whole concept of the database sharding, which was you have an active and an inactive database, and only the active database has all the characters that loaded in, you know, like those kinds of things that weren't really in the forefront of your mind when you're building the game because you're focused on building it.
Sure.
And now we're at the point where we're like, holy crap, we have over 18 million players now. Like, we're starting to burst at the seams. How do we make these things stay up, and how do we make these things performant?
Right.
So those are the things that we're looking at. You know, Cyrodiil is a huge one on our list right now, is, you know, fix it, make the performance, you know, as good as launch was. You know, players love Cyrodiil. They love being in there, but it gets frustrating when you're fighting, you know, performance issues, the lag that, you know, when the server is having problems. So those are kind of the first and foremost right now, to kind of go through and clean up. And it's a big, huge, monstrous task, because it's not as simple as, oh, well, we'll just change this variable or change this line of code.
Right.
Because it's all based on just load, and load issues are the hardest things for us to try and debug and fix.
Yeah.
Well, especially from that aspect, is like in terms of the PvP side of things, like I prefer Cyrodiil over BGs, just because I like the huge, I'm the first one to say, it's like, I love Zergs. Everybody's like, oh, Zerging sucks. It's like, no, Zerging is great. That's how Medieval War worked. Like,
I'm a Zerg surfer. I love it. I love it.
That to me is fun. Like, I love Castle Sieges, where all three factions hit the same place at like an empty, like the final empty. It's like,
those are so fun.
It is. It's so much fun. But even outside of just like performance, like you were saying, trying to account for that many people just being in one place on varying degrees of internet alone on all sorts of, I mean, it's not even like it's just a US based thing, but just within the coasts of the United States, you've got people from California or East Coast or whatever, all wedged into the same place at the same time on different connections fighting that. It's like, I can't even fathom trying to keep that from just blowing up with what that is, let alone expanding out. It's like, okay, yeah, people are obviously casting every part of their rotation, and there's people from, you know, all over the globe doing it. It's like, yeesh, that's I don't envy
it's
that.
It's economies of scale, right?
Yeah,
you know, and there's actually a neat comment in chat there from Bob, where he's, you know, saying, you know, 18 million players times characters, you know, that's a heck lot of he said F ton, but I'll say heck ton of data. And it really is, you know, and we have to plan for that, where, you know, when we did the mail expiry finally.
Oh yeah.
Right. Like that was a huge thing performance wise on the server and on the database side. It sucks for the players because they've had this stuff stored up forever. But just that one small change nuked over 50. I better get this right. Nuked over 50 gigabytes on each server, just in the database.
Holy crap.
What? Holy That's crap. Weird.
And also, these are just like simple little mails, right? Like they're not huge with huge attachments or anything like that. So just think of that in terms of just sheer scale. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, because it's like generally most of the mails are probably like literally one line. I mean, I wasn't helping the cause. I had my original congratulations for being crowned emperor, and it had been there for 3 years.
Yeah.
And I just refused to get rid of it. And then I had to screenshot it when it said 1 day left. I was like, no.
Yeah, and we totally get that. But it was just something that saved a ton of space, reduced database sizes. And that was just on one server.
Yeah, that yikes.
Wow. Yeah, having personally worked for some startups that were doing some game design, and then for a marketing firm that did internet design, like websites and those kinds of things, having to deal with servers and things like that. This is one of the things that I see a lot in the community, is people who are just like, they're just they can't they get this under control, and la 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 la, and they unless you've worked in these things, you don't understand how complex and large these kinds of issues can be, especially with something like 18 million people across a game the size of The Elder Scrolls Online. Like, the scale of that is very hard to imagine.
I still struggle with it.
Yeah.
You know, when an engineer comes to me and says, we can't do that for these reasons, I'm like, BS, we can totally do this. We just throw more hardware at it. No, actually, that's not how it works. And here's why. And you're like, oh, okay, I understand now.
Yeah.
But not everybody has an engineer that they can sit down and talk to and be like, okay, I don't understand this problem, walk me through it.
Right, right. Yeah. Once you're in a situation where you work with somebody like that, and their eyes get big, and they look at you and go, that, like, I've hit the boundary of what's possible. We're gonna have to figure something else out. Yeah. Lotus, do you have any questions you wanna toss out?
I was gonna say, I mean, we can kind of scoot along if you want, because I mean, specifically about that, like, it's good to hear, just because, I mean, as I had mentioned, I prefer Cyrodiil in the grand scheme of things. That's kind of my go-to. So hearing that that's been a thing, and I mean, I already knew that to an extent, because even though I mainly play on console, seeing all the tests being done and all of that, I knew you guys were messing with it to a degree. So, high hopes. To be fair, as much as I'm all for, if I have an issue with something, I'll certainly bring it up. But I, as somebody who's played like probably an unhealthy amount of PvP, I feel like in that regard, sometimes I feel kind of lucky, because my performance has never been that bad on PS4. I mean, it definitely gets a little chaotic, but it's like some of the things I hear, I'm like, I've never encountered that, so I'm not really going to complain about that. So.
That, yeah, I mean, it can get bad, you know, defense,
absolutely.
You know, you
and
can
I mean,
feel
my
it.
Frame but... rates skip and stuff like that during crazy fights. But it's just funny, because in the grand scheme of things, because, you know, I've talked to you and Finn and everybody else. I mean, I definitely have my things that I've been like, oh, I don't like this or whatever. Cyrodiil's actually, I'm in like the super minority where I'm like, I don't know, my Cyrodiil runs pretty well for whatever reason. So
you live right next to a server. That's
that's what it is. Yeah, that's my cheat. That's my cheat code. I literally live next to a server.
Yeah, there's one in your house. They rent out your basement for a set of servers that run in your home. Well, I've got a question to toss out there, just kind of a personal interest question. And this is this is a quick question. I'm sure people asked this before. As a fan of the Dark Brotherhood, as so many people are, is there any chance we'll get more
Dark Brotherhood?
More Dark Bros coming? Remember an expansion?
I mean, anything is possible, right?
Anything's
possible. Who knows? We've got a lot of years left under our belts to kind of dig through and stories to tell. So anything could happen.
Yeah, I would love to see an expansion on those two expansions. You know, some like a return to those. I think that would be a lot of fun. And maybe, you know, some more skills and things. You know, you could throw some other some other fun stuff in there as well. Lotus, do you have a question on the list that you want to?
All right. So we can. Yeah. My next one is with story, lore, and characters being so important in the series of Elder Scrolls as a whole, how much focus do you guys all need to kind of put on that, as opposed to, obviously, you have a myriad of systems and you have dungeon designs and trial designs? How much of that is based on what you're trying to portray in the story as opposed to the other way around? Like, do you have one for try to fit the other, a mix?
That's something that's definitely morphed over the years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the point we're at now, story kind of drives everything.
Okay. That's and, how I felt. So that kind of why I was interested in this.
Yeah, it definitely does. And it starts when Matt and I, Matt's the president and game director of ZOS. You know, when we start talking about what we want to go to and, you know, the stories we want to tell, that's what we focus on is stories. You know, where have we been? Where have we not been? What's the feel of the stories that we've told previously? How do we make that feel different? And a lot of times we break things down to like one word type things. Elsewhere was revenge, right? Okay. Like that was kind of the feel, the theme, you know, Greymoor was, Gothic. And so having that kind of one word kind of helps inform everything kind of going forward. And then I can sit down with the teams and start, you know, helping set some of the boundaries of the box of what the story is, not necessarily all the beats and all the stories that go in there, but just kind of the major touch points that we want to make sure the players learn over the course of the year. Mm-hmm. And then the teams can go off and use that as a foundation for telling the stories and going to the locations we do. And the dungeon team's a big part of that as well. They're rolled into those so that when they're telling their stories in the dungeons, they can tie in to the overarching storyline. And provide some more context and backstory for the entire year.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
So I guess I could kind of combine this because it's one of the ones I listed as like a follow-up. But how much freedom do you all have? Since this is, we had kind of made reference to it earlier in the grand scheme of things, but like to narrow that down a little bit more. I mean, ESO being a prequel and it's, you know, like we had mentioned, a larger part of the series as a whole, how much freedom do you have to do what you do your own thing with the story? Because obviously you need to kind of fact check and lore mm-hmm. check the grand scheme of things. But how much, I guess, just on a whole, do you have freedom in trying to tell the story you want? And do you have to have it go through a myriad of things to
approval processes,
approval processes? I mean, you'll obviously have some of that, but it's like, if you have something specific in mind, would you be able to pull that off, or could it be tailored, or how would you go about it?
It depends on what it is. Okay. So, you know, we get a lot of latitude to kind of do our own thing and tell the stories we want to tell. As long as they fit within the lore guidelines and the world.
Sure.
And there are some things that are obviously sacred cows and not something we'll ever dig into. And we've learned that over the years.
Yep.
You know, P.S. we're never going to tell you where the Dwemer, you know,
yeah,
what happened to the Dwemer at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not surprised.
Right. We do get a lot of freedom, and that kind of trust in us has grown over the years as well. You know, early on, it was a lot harder to do things. You know, dragons for me was one of the biggest things I wanted to do for launch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, nope, can't do it, can't do it, can't do it. And then elsewhere, we were allowed to do dragons.
Yeah, that was a surprise to a lot of people, contentiously in some situations where
it made sense, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I'm of the camp that I thought it fit. I don't know. It didn't even strike me as weird personally. I was like, okay, well, we know they're not dead. Like some of them are dead, but like, I don't know. That one didn't strike me as exceptionally peculiar as long as they were done well. And I thought they were. So,
yeah. And that's basically how our relationship works with BGS, right? Mm-hmm. Is, you know, we can have those difficult conversations, and some stuff is just too far out there,
yeah,
and we'll never really dig in there. But you know, we've definitely been able to go pretty much everywhere in the world now.
Yeah.
And tell stories, a lot of very different stories about a lot of very different things. So I think we've done a pretty good job overall. And you know, we've got a pretty good relationship with those folks there.
That's great. When it comes to exploring different places in the world, do you enjoy tackling new regions? Or do you like revisiting other like region, like the Skyrim stuff? Like we'd been there and we're revisiting it, or Morrowind, you know, been there revisiting it. Or is it more fun to just go to a place we've never been before and have free reign, or at least as much reign as you can, to make it your own thing?
I think any creative person will tell you they would much prefer to do their own thing, Carblanche. So, you know, making brand new things from whole cloth is always a ton of fun. But being able to go and build upon what's already established, you know, going to Skyrim and telling a different story in the Skyrim world so people get more of an understanding of what that is, that's also, you know, a huge challenge and something that, you know, we enjoy doing. And that's kind of why we do things the way we've been doing them, where we'll kind of mix and match that. Going and doing Somerset was fantastic because there was almost nothing known about those islands and that area. And so we got to really play with things. But Morrowind was fantastic. Skyrim was fantastic for its own different things, you know, reimagining those areas almost 1,000 years before. You know, we got to show you Vivek City being built. Like, how freaking cool is that?
Yeah. And when you think about real world locations, you know, like there are places you can go in our own world that are 1,000 years old and there's still structure standing there.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, they're different. They're ruined, or there's new structures on top of them. And and it's almost the difference between starting with a writer's prompt or not. Right. And both can be enjoyable in their own ways. So it's kind of fun.
I think if you only did one thing,
it would
get old. But yeah. It's always different for us and everything's changing. And that's kind of the magic of why we're still going as strong as we are now.
Yeah. Lotus?
So I guess based on kind of talking about that and, you know, referring to tackling some ideas that have already been touched on in the series, we can kind of move a little bit into the other half where we can get some background on you, Rich, and what you have to do with the series. So
I can tell you enjoy like talking about yourself.
It's
easier to talk about the game. How about that? No, well, whatever. Well, this is good. Yeah, we can do this.
Fine. We'll softball you. How'd you get involved with the gaming industry as a whole?
Completely by sheer dumb luck.
Why is that so common?
Seriously, like I've always been huge into video games, playing games. Like it's always been a huge, huge passion.
Yeah.
But I always thought that games were made by a few people. They were perfect as soon as they were just typing in code and an artist would do some art and then it was done. I had no idea that there was this huge involved process in this iterative cycle.
Wait, that's not how it's done?
Right. It's pretty amazing.
What? Well, I guess I can't just pick this up as an after work activity.
All right.
And, you know, I went to school. I was going for, you know, my business degree, and I thought that I was going to be, you know, a golf pro. Like that's what I wanted to do. That's what I wanted to be. I was you know, teaching junior clinics and things like that. So like that was what I wanted to be, a teaching pro. I didn't think I was ever good enough to be a PGA Tour pro player, but you know, a teaching pro. And one summer in between semesters, one of my buddies got a job testing video games at EA.
Okay.
He's like, dude, I just got a job testing video games. And I straight up told him that was BS. Like there's no such thing, right? No possible way.
They come out perfect. Nobody has to test them.
And he's like, you know, they're hiring, so give me your resume and I'll put it in. And so I was like, yeah, whatever. So I put it in and I got a call like a week later.
Wow.
And I went for their kind of test, which was they had a VHS tape they played that was full of bugs on it. And they were like, write down as many bugs as you can in the next 20 minutes. And that was my test. And so I was writing bugs and I I filled like a notebook of like I just all these things, and they basically hired me on the spot then.
That's amazing.
And it was supposed to just be a summer job. And it turned into instead of a contract, it was, you know, a part-time over 25-hour contract that lasted like 7 years.
Okay, that's wow. A pretty involved part-time contract.
I just kind of went from there. I spent 7 years in QA and then moved into production and then moved into design, and then now I'm the creative director, and it's been 26 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's amazing.
Yeah. Sheer and utter dumb luck.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, a lot of people ask these questions. There are a lot of people in the community that being, you know, working with a, you know, game studio or something like that is one of their things on their list of like, oh, it'd be nice to do this. But yep. I feel like the path, and I've heard other people talk about this, the path continues to change and evolve as studios have evolved and grown and those kinds of things. Do you think it's for somebody starting today, do you feel like that's still a path that would work for them?
Yeah, it does. We at Zos, we do a lot of hiring from our QA team. Mm-hmm. So much that we've been told stop because you're poaching all a lot of talent.
We won't be able to QA anymore. Stop it.
It's definitely a path. It's a hard path. Like QA is not glamorous.
No, I've worked QA briefly.
It's right, and depending on where you are, it's better than some other places. But it's totally not glamorous. I think, you know, as a hiring manager now, the things that I look for are, you know, the passion, like going and getting your degree in game design or whatever. That's great and all. But to me, the most important thing is showing me that passion. So if you want to be a writer, show me this portfolio of your writing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to be a designer, mm-hmm. show me the mods you're working on. Show me, you know, that kind of stuff. That's the best way to prove to somebody that you want to be a designer. It doesn't have to be AAA crazy, crazy good quality either. Like it just has to show thought process and taking a concept from your brain to paper to in game somehow. Mm-hmm. And how you translate that. And that's a huge, huge thing. And something that I wish they pushed a little bit more in schools.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, like, yes, it's great that you know how to do these things and you know, you've gone through that. But if I can't see the work, I can't evaluate what kind of designer or writer or whatnot you're going to be. And that's a huge, huge part.
Yeah, I have a 20-year-old. I have a 20-year-old daughter and a 10-year-old son. And one of the things that I continually still try to teach him, even my 20-year-old daughter, of course, I'm still her dad, is that the world does not work like it used to. And if you want to work in the career that you want to work in, do it for free as much as you can until somebody will pay you to do it.
there's a slippery slope with that statement.
Right. But like if you want to be a game designer, then start designing your own games. Start doing it. Start modding your own stuff so that when you finally get that interview, you can say, here's the portfolio of work that I have. This is all the effort I've put into it. These are the processes I've gone through. You're gonna answer all their questions for them because they're gonna see that you either fit the job or you don't. And that's the best way to interview for anything is to just be able to show them, hey, I can already do the job. I'm also really driven. Okay, so you sound like a good candidate.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I get a lot of people, you know, either fresh out of college or just random people are like, hey, you know, I have good ideas on making video games. How can I get into the industry? And I hate that question because everybody has ideas, right? There's no such thing as an idea person in the games industry anymore. Everybody has ideas, and the best ideas come when a bunch of people get together and they collaborate on something. And so what you need is the skills to translate ideas into working designs or working art or working, you know, words.
Yes.
I was gonna say fiction, right?
Right.
Ironic words was the hardest one to come up with.
It always is.
Can you tell what I'm good at? it's definitely changing and morphing as time goes for sure. And you know, it can still happen. You can still, you know, make your way up through the QA track. It's definitely hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, there you go, guys. There, everyone who's thinking about getting game stuff, start doing it on your own. Start start just doing things. You're going to you'll learn so much just by doing stuff. I mean, it comes to like podcasting too. Like there's no podcast track in high school, right?
Right.
There's I mean, I guess you could go into like broadcasting or something. But you just have to do it. You just have to do it and then you do it and then you listen to yourself and you go, "Well, that's cringy." And then you do it some more and you listen to yourself and you go, "That's a little less cringy." And then you just keep doing it and then eventually you figure it all out. It's just the
iteration is huge.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's never right the first time. And if it is, it's sheer and utter dumb luck.
Sheer luck. Yeah. Say. Absolutely.
Yeah. Lotus, do you have another one you want to toss out?
Yeah. So in regards to that, since you apparently started way back with EA and, you know, QA, when did you get introduced to the Elder Scrolls as a series?
Well, I think Daggerfall was probably the first one that I really started digging into.
Daggerfall player. Impressive.
So, I mean, I had my issues with it. I think I had my save corrupted two or three times before I was like...
I mean, it is Daggerfall.
Right? I think Morrowind was probably the one that I really fell head over heels for. Like, I can remember saying to myself... and actually going and spending a bunch of money on a PC so that I could actually play it in all its glory. Like that was kind of the game. It was just so wild and whatnot for me. And then it wasn't actually that much after that when I was fortunate enough to get a job at Bethesda and start working on Oblivion.
That was my entry into the series was Oblivion.
Oblivion.
I tried to get into Morrowind. And I was, you know, I'm old enough to have been playing games in the 90s when the other ones were out, but I was just playing other games. I guess I didn't have friends who were playing those games, and so I didn't take the dive to try them out. And it wasn't like there was, you know, YouTube or Twitch where I could watch somebody do it and be like, oh, I want to try that. If it didn't show up in a game magazine or something, then you didn't really know much about it. But yeah, and that's something that it was Oblivion, the first game you worked on, it was the first game I played and have been into role-playing games and those kinds of things for a long time, but it was that game was formative for me as a player because it was one of the first times I truly felt like I was role-playing my character and the game brought me to that rather than me imparting that on the game. If that makes sense. Like I remember going to visit my parents and they were like, so what's new? And I was like, oh, there's not really a whole lot new. But the only thing I had in my mind was I've been playing Oblivion. I'm thinking my parents are not going to want to hear me talk about the game. And I'm like, well, that's okay. I'll talk about it. And I spent like an hour telling them about how this game was so well designed that it had me entering a world that I didn't understand and feeling the need to explore that world in order to continue and learn more about it because I was being pulled into it. And there's something magical about that. And it's something that, I don't know, persists to this day when you play these games. It has to do with the lore, has to do with the characters. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to do a show like this was to dive more into understanding what's underneath this universe. Because like I was surprised to find out there were vampires. I had no idea. I became a vampire and didn't know what was going on and why I had these crazy dreams. And all of a sudden the sun hurts me. And I was like, there's not vampires in this game. There are vampires in this game. Uh-huh. I had no idea. You know, like I was discovering things by living in the world, which is kind of the way the world works. You're just kind of thrown into it. And then you just have to discover things because, you know, there's no owner's manual on your life. Right.
That's right. Yeah.
So that, I don't know. For me, that was a big, big thing.
It's that freedom to kind of explore the world at your own pace and not really being on rails, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the big, big aspect of the world.
And the games treat you as an intelligent person. They don't, you don't meet somebody who worships Meridia and there's all of a sudden dialogue that says Meridia is the Daedric prince of, oh, and by the way, Daedric means this. And like, you know, like you just, just like in the real world, when you meet somebody and they use a word you haven't used before, you don't always get the chance to have them define that word for you. You just have to hear it in context a few times and then start to kind of make out what it means. And then you can explore it through just the situation of being in that world. I don't know. There's something very powerful about that. And it treats the players like they're intelligent human beings, not people who have to be, you know, spoon fed all the little details, which makes it so much more fulfilling when you start to really understand those little details and the little nuggets of the lore and how things connect.
I agree. It's a remarkable world. Remarkable world.
Yeah. Well, I'll stop talking because we should have you talk some more. So,
well, it makes it feel very lived in. Like, it makes it feel real using that. So, one quick question, just because it's a pretty good one from chat, from Alonso. What exactly was your title on Oblivion before we get into more Oblivion-based things?
I was a producer, so okay. I was leading the tech team.
So there you go.
For the consoles.
Which was where I played. So,
right.
Can you give a little insight as to your specific connection, since you worked on Oblivion and it was, you know, your kind of, I guess, you know, entrance into the development side of Elder Scrolls on as a whole? This obviously, this season is going to have some type of strong connection to you. Can you elaborate on that at all?
I think I've said this a few times, but Meereen's Dagon is probably my favorite prince in the lore. And so being able to go in and kind of show
not musically
more about him, right? And let players kind of dig into his kind of inner thinking and kind of how his world works. And then being able to go in and really, you know, explore a little bit more of the Deadlands, you know, you're going to see bits and pieces of that in the Blackwood chapter, but in the fourth quarter, you're going to get to spend a lot of time there.
Well, nice. It's interesting because Dagon also has kind of his face value of I blow things up and I have, you know, a lot of arms, but there's like there's several layers to him that when we've discussed Dagon on the Lorecast in episodes, and actually shout out to my friend Loctavian, we had kind of like a March Madness style elimination tournament over coolness of Daedric Princess for a podcast on his channel, and Dagon has a lot more to the character than just blowing everything up. And it's interesting because I feel like not a lot of people see that at first. I'm currently playing through Battlespire, which is an experience in and of itself. Daggerfall ran like a dream compared to the way Battlespire kind of runs on a modern day system. But that, you know, super relates to Dagon's assault on the Battlespire. And in general, you know, the farther back you look, there's references to him being more of an object of hope as opposed to destruction and stuff like that. So that's change interesting. And, change, I was going to say.
Change is a big part. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm very curious to see how you all fill more of that story out, because his Oblivion version was okay, I'm invading Tamriel, like that's pretty straightforward. You don't really do the straightforward thing so much in Elder Scrolls Online, so I'll be curious to see what the twist around this is going forward then, if that's the case.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see everybody put it together.
Yeah, so on a scale of between like one and freaking awesome, how was it what would you rate being in Oblivion in Elder Scrolls Online the first time and then seeing like gigantic multi-arm Meereen's Dagon walk past you?
It was pretty awesome. The very first time, and I mean, over the course of development, I see it in all kinds of different stages.
Yeah.
Right. I see it in the checkerboard stage, in the gray box stage, where you just get kind of rough shapes. Right. Everybody knows what I mean by checkerboards, because I see pictures posted on Twitter all the time about finding the checkerboard worlds. So I see it in a bunch of different, you know, different states, but that first time I walked into an Oblivion portal with the kind of the final world building and the final art, I was just like, holy crap. Like, this is unbelievably cool. And then the first, I won't spoil it, but seeing Meereen's Dagon, in all his glory was pretty freaking awesome too.
Yeah. It's one of those things that was, I feel like was a limitation of its time back when Oblivion came out. was this, like, you get to the end scene and you have giant Maeruns Dagon and then you got the big dragon, right? And they fight and they're standing over the city. Spoiler, still like a 13-year-old game at this point. But yeah, we've talked about this on the show. Everybody knows if they listen to the Lorecast that we're going to be talking about spoilery things.
But as long as it's not current season of ESO spoilers, those are really the only ones we ever dodge.
Usually we kind of hold out on that for a good 6 months or so. But I feel like that must have been like a hardware limitation. Like, I can't imagine that you didn't, it didn't come through the minds of you guys in development of like, well, you can have this gigantic guy stomping around in Oblivion when you go through a portal, you know, and then it's just like, well, can we really pull that off? I mean, was it not something that was considered? I know this is kind of off to the side.
I mean, everything is always considered. Yeah. Generally, designers will come up with just batshit crazy ideas. And then we try to figure out how to do that. And a lot of times you can't do what you were originally thinking, but you find a way to get something close. Uh-huh. And as technology gets better and better and better, you know, you can start to do more and more things. And so you're starting to see that, even in over the course of ESO, like you look at our launch content and what we did and now what we can do, it's pretty remarkably different.
Yeah, it's pretty noticeable the difference in the just artistic quality of starter zones compared to later zones. And I've from PTS alone, which isn't even finished, you've got City of Ash 1 and 2 with the Deadlands,
right?
And then you've got the Deadlands now, and it's like, wow, that's, you made hell look pretty. Like, that's kind of weird. Like,
part of that is we're a lot smarter than we were when we did that originally, but the other part is just the technology has changed, and we can just do more.
Interesting. That's fascinating, because again, rarely, I mean, I guess outside of a living world like Elder Scrolls Online, where you actually get to see in the same game a shift that dramatic, where you can even go from, you don't need to switch this, oh, I don't need to go to a different game. It's just like, oh, here's where this year was and here's where this year was. And it's like, oh wow, there's actually like a noticeable improvement in just the visual fidelity as you move forward, or there's more things happening, even if it's just like, because again, I've always thought the game like looks good or whatever, but then it's like, well, there's more happening, even if it still looks good, but now we're doing more things at the same time. So,
Oh, yeah. Every time we've had an expansion where something is different, you know, I mean, you can talk about the dragons, or you can talk about, or even just some of the story things that happen in Somerset. And the first time you like are standing there with like three Jager princes who are like larger than life arguing with each other.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, crap. Look at those guys. All right. Yeah. OK, maybe we are kind of like ants to them. I get it. I kind of get it. You know, like anytime you get to have one of those experiences, especially when it breaks the boundaries of what you come to expect from the game, is always exciting as a player. I'm sure it's fun to develop that stuff too and see people react to it.
It's totally fun for us to kind of change things up.
Yeah. Yeah. Lotus, you got any other questions?
I guess. All right. So this is kind of almost like a two-part thing, but we'll start. So ESO is both very similar and different from other games in the series for obvious reasons. And you were there from the beginning phases because you've been with ESO since its conception, as far as I know, correct?
I have been. Yeah.
Okay.
Number two
okay.
Hired.
Okay. Wow. That's what I thought. Yep. I think it might have been the Lore Seekers that I heard that on. There was like you were right there at the start. So
freaking Jimmy, number one hire.
So the thing I wanted to get into is the genre shift. Like, what spurred that? Like, I mean, there's been very little dabbling into multiplayer within the series. It's not the first that Shadow Key, again, what was technically, it had Bluetooth play over N-Gage, and Battle Spire had some mess. But like, other than that, this is the real full dive into multiplayer, and then more so massively multiplayer. It's not just like a co-op aspect. So what spurred the genre shift, I guess, since you would have been there since the start?
Well, I don't want to say that it was all me, but I think the story that I love to tell about this is, you know, when I first started at Bethesda, you know, I'm a huge MMO player, you know, so Ultima Online, The Realm, like pretty much anything that came out, I played it. EverQuest, I met my wife in there, you know, we're still married. Like,
oh, that's cool. That's awesome.
Like a huge, huge online gamer. Like I love the genre. And I would pester Todd a lot about, hey, you know what? This game would make an awesome MMO. Awesome MMO. And he'd be like, yeah, whatever. No, go away. Yeah, whatever. Go away. We're worried about this other stuff. And I would bug him fairly often over the course of, you know, the first 2 years that I was there. And then one day I got a call to go down to Rockville because I was up at the small satellite office that we had with our tech group. And he was like, we need to chat. And I'm like, uh-oh.
I'm in trouble. I shouldn't have put that extra sticky note on his desk that said MMO question mark seven times in a row.
Actually, it was more than seven. But and when I got to his office, Matt Firer was sitting in his office with Todd. And Todd was like, Matt, this is Rich. All he talks about is MMOs. All he wants to do is make MMOs. He's like, Rich, this is Matt. We've hired Matt on to, you know, explore what an MMO might mean. He's like, Matt, please take Rich. Please take Rich. Like, he is the MMO guy. Please do this. And we talked for like 3 hours that day, and I got hired, and we've kind of, you know, done that forever. So I mean, obviously Todd and you know, and senior management, you know, wanted to do this for a long time. I like to think I escalated it because I was just a pain in the ass.
Yep. Hey, you gotta be, whatever works.
But that's kind of, you know, at least for me, that was kind of what I saw from the outside, you know. And then once we were actually on the team and going through and looking at that stuff, we had a lot of really hard, difficult conversations about what Elder Scrolls with Friends meant. Just trying to figure out what that meant, how it was going to work. And, you know, we didn't get it right. Launch was not what players wanted.
Yeah.
And, you know, you all loudly let us know that. And so,
what, the internet, you know, that, complaining about things? What?
We're so relaxed.
That first, you know, year was really tough. And we, you know, took a really hard look at the game we made. And you know, the core was really good. We had a really good foundation, but it wasn't quite Elder Scrolls enough. And so we spent a lot of time kind of going through and really reevaluating what Elder Scrolls meant and how that was going to translate. And that's where things like when Tamriel came from, where it was get rid of this level gated kind of theme parky kind of, you know, hand hold you through the world and just give players the freedom to explore the world the way they want to. You know, that's where Dark Brotherhood and Thieves Guild came from. That's where, you know, a lot of these other systems started coming online that helped improve the exploration aspect of the world. And, you know, that, you know, getting to launch, getting to live for that 1.0 version was really, really tough. But changing the game was even tougher and going through that process. And I'm super proud of the team, you know, to be able to kind of stick through that and be like, you know what, we're not going to quit. We're going to go through this. I'm super thankful for, you know, the senior management team who is like, you guys have a good game. Now go fucking fix it. Right. Like they could have pulled the plug, you know, if we were at, you know, some other places, they probably would have just been like life support, milk this as long as we can and then shut it down. And they didn't do that. They knew the IP was super strong, but they knew we had a core game there. We were just missing some bits and pieces. And so they gave us the time and the opportunity to do it. And we jumped on it. And now look what we got.
Well, that's awesome. Interesting you say that, because I way back, obviously before the other show that I'm on, Tales of Tamriel, I would listen to them and they were hyped in advance for that long before I had anything to do with podcasting. And when they talked about the competition that was kind of coming out along with you guys, it's funny because the story that you just told is so much different than the story of so many of the other games that came out around the same time, which are no longer around.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, Elder Scrolls Online persevered, whereas things like WildStar did not. And it's like, originally it was like, oh man, there's all these big games and, you know, there's kind of not that many from that realm that came out that are still around. It's just kind of Elder Scrolls Online and Final Fantasy, both of which are doing great in their own way. You know what I mean? So it's like they cover different markets and stuff
and
that. WoW. So it's fascinating.
And that too.
But, well, WoW's been around since basically before
Everybody was chasing everybody was chasing the WoW formula.
So it's absolutely
into some other of those games.
But I guess, I mean, you kind of answered some of it, but like, what was, are there any other things that you specifically remember that you were trying to do? Because the way you had mentioned that it's like the game came out and you did have a good game because it felt good. I mean, I played at beta, but I actually didn't jump super into the game for a while. I dabbled with it because a bunch of my friends got it and I love the IP. So I was like, oh, this is okay, but I'm not an MMO player, which is what's kind of, that was the selling point that you guys had a tough time with me at first, because it felt much more like an MMO to start with. Now it feels like an Elder Scrolls game with a lot of other people involved.
Right. And sometimes, you know, Argonians are sleeping on bridges.
Yeah.
Things like that. You know?
Play the way you want.
Exactly. You had mentioned some. Is there anything else you can think of specifically that you kind of redirected to try? I mean, obviously the one Tamriel thing made it feel very much like an Elder Scrolls game because you could walk around it. You weren't gated like that. Is there anything else like you can think of that specifically was kind of like a red flag at the start? And since then you guys have corrected just because so much has changed and it feels so much like a normal Elder Scrolls game, but just in a different genre, as opposed to it felt like an MMO with an Elder Scrolls name, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of examples I could give. You know, one of the things, you know, early on that we kind of decided was because this is an online game, we wanted to make sure that there were reasons for players to play with other players.
Yep.
And so some of our tuning was kind of off in that regard. You know, we kind of missed the mark on just how many players wanted to play the story by themselves.
Gotcha.
And so we spent a lot of time kind of going through early on at launch trying to fix a lot of those things. And as a result, we decided that, you know, any crit path story was going to be soloable. And so there's a crit path throughout all the zones where, you know, you can go through and you know, solo through all of that and hopefully have a good time soloing where it's just the right amount of challenge for, you know, most people. I think another really big thing that we totally missed the mark on was what I'll call kind of world-changing events in quests, where you go in and, you know, the world is on fire or not on fire in one, and then it is in another, or it's totally under attack, and then when you're done, it's no longer an attack. And that sounds fantastic on paper, and that is fantastic as a solo player game. It is awful in a multiplayer setting because you separate all your players from each other.
I remember.
And you can't ever play with your friends.
I remember trying to figure that out because, again, I'm not an MMOer. Yes. And I had completed something and I went back to help somebody with theirs. And I'm like, you're gone. You're just a chevron. Why can't I see you? And I was like, oh, wait, because this town is saved in my game. They're like, everything's on fire and Daedra killing everyone. I was like, yeah, you're on your own. I'm going to go fishing. And
and that was a... That was a problem that we spent a long time. I personally spent 6 months working to undo a lot of those things. And we still have these, you know, world-changing events, but they're in a smaller group instance now. Or they're on a specific layer, or, you know, the change is now more visual. You know, this NPC is there or they're not there, right? But we don't split you up like we used to. So you can still always play with your friends.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely one of the things that's people ask about a lot. You know, like, can I play it on my own? like, we still get questions, you know, we'll stream it or, you know, during the show, like, hey, this sounds fun. Can I play it on my own? Yeah. In fact, most of the time I play it on my own too, you know, especially when there's new story content out. Like, I want to take that at my own pace. I want to explore it how I want to explore. If I come across a side quest and I want to go do that for a little while, I just want to go do that, you know, like, if all of a sudden I get an itch to craft something, I want to stop and go do that, you know, like, but at the same time, if there's, you know, a bunch of friends hopping on and they're like, hey, we're going to do a thing, I want to be able to do that too. And it's, you guys have been able to facilitate both of those things so well. And I think that's part of what makes the game so appealing, is that the stories are good. The lore is good. You can dive in and get that stuff. But then when you have friends who want to do other things, you can still join them and go hang out. And it works really well for both ways. We're getting close to the end of our show. Do we have anything else that we want to toss out there?
Most important question of all, which I know that Bob Chachinsky and Chad and our friends over at the Red Diamond Courier will really appreciate, because they love the fact that I bring this stuff up all the time.
Yes. And we should preface this with, we did a patron episode. So once a month on the show, we have some of our patrons join us and chat about things. And we had an episode where we all got to talk about our favorite factions. And all of the patrons who were on the show happened to be of the same mindset as Lotus and I. So we declared on that episode, all like seven of us that were on the show, that this specific faction is the best. And Lotus,
I see where this is going.
So I mean, you politely have all three flags behind you, and I know oftentimes you've got your representation of the Daggerfall Covenant, but you know Ebonheart packs the best, right?
I gotta disagree with that statement.
Oh my god! No, I gotta disagree with that.
I'm a blueberry through and through. I do have characters on the other alliances, but my highest ranking PvPer is on the Daggerfall Covenant.
You could redeem yourself right here on the show.
I mean, like you said, I politely have a red banner up. So.
Politely. If you zoom in close enough, it's hard to see. There's like a big X through it in like red ink. Yeah.
But that was great. Thank you so much for joining us, Rich. This was
a ton of fun, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Rich. We really, really do appreciate it. Thank you, chat, for being here. If you guys have other questions or want to talk more about this stuff, feel free to do so on the Discord. I will be right back in about 15 minutes with the Dungeons and Dragons lore cast. So if you're into tabletop games and D&D, stick around for that. And Rich, thank you for being here. A huge honor to get the chance to talk to you. We really do appreciate it. Hopefully we get together in like Vegas or something again sometime soon.
I would love that. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that would be
beers
awesome.
Beers on me.
Awesome. Sweet. Yes. We'll take you up on it.
All right.
Have a great one.
All right, everybody. Have a good rest of your day and stay tuned for the Dungeons and Dragons Lorecast. See you guys later.
Bye, everybody.
The sky's a mark.
Oh, I gotta hit the other button. There we go. Thanks for listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. If you have something you'd like to contribute to the show, please reach out to us at elderscrollslorecast@gmail.com or on Twitter at @ESOLorecast. I really appreciate you listening, and I'd love to hear from you soon.
You've been listening to the Robots Radio Podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
Hey there, my name's Jameson, or Big Cat.
And I am Brenna, or Mother Goose.
And together, we are the hosts of The DL, Weekly Gaming News.
Each week, we bring you the top stories from last week, as well as something you might have missed.
Our goal is to start a conversation about what's going on in the world of gaming.
And every week, we have a special guest join us in the chat room, where we discuss a different gaming-related topic and learn more about our guests and the 60-second download.
And if that isn't enough, we also have Slim Jims.
So come and hang out with us every week and join in on the conversation.
Good luck and have fun, everybody.
And remember, keep your goose loose.
Hey, I'm Tom.
And I'm Stuart.
And we're from the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast.
We talk about all things connected to D&D lore.
And we're on the Robots Radio Network. So if you're into Dungeons & Dragons or you're into lore, then come check us out. You can find us on any podcatcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get podcasts.
Roll more dice.
That's the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast.
Hey, all you wannabe raiders out there. It's your best.
bestest girl, Rose, coming at you from top of the world. Now it's time for your local traffic and weather. Welp, looks like almost everyone's still dead, so traffic is at a standstill. And now a word from our sponsor, because they're totally not bribing me with massive amounts of chems or anything. Seems as the stuffed shirts are back at the White Springs playing games with that total loser Modus. But hey, if that's your thing, whatever. So if all you squares wanted to hear more totally sort of, but maybe not boring stories about rebuilding Appalachia and being all goody-two-shoes, definitely not Raiders, check out this thing they call a podcast, The Modus Files, whatever that's supposed to be, on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever else you listen to those things. Double ugh. They're not paying me enough for this. Till